You're listening to That Lit Podcast. You're all that I need in the world. This episode's guest, Bay Area writer, author of Wet Reckless, Cassandra Dollett. We have a pretty deep conversation in this episode. I hope you like it. As always, I remain your host with a ghost who likes to eat toast, Alexandra Naughton. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the show.
She'll just rub against it. Okay, so, test. Is this working? Yeah. All right, cool. So, I'm sitting in my apartment right now with Cassandra Dollett. Do you like when people say your name like that?
That's why. I'm not super picky about it.
So who are you? What do you do?
A poet, I guess, even though I still think that's kind of a weird thing to call yourself. But yeah, I am that. I started out writing, like, wanting to write a memoir or something like that. But I'm super short attention span.
Yeah.
And I thought I hated poetry, actually, when I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, had to write a couple for a class or whatever, and then it just kind of caught on in a big way.
Your poetry totally is memoir, though, I feel like. Like, and, you know, you capture things. And, like, why write a short story? Like, you have everything there, and it's so descriptive, and, like, I feel like I grew up with you or something like that, because I, reading or just hearing you read your poems or reading them myself, like, wow, you've been through a lot, and, like, it's great that you're able to capture it that way.
Thank you. I mean, that's good to hear, because that's what, I feel like it works. Like,
yeah.
I feel like what I discovered with poetry is that you can tell an entire story in a few lines, mm-hmm. in a bunch of lines, in whatever, but you don't have to fill up a whole book with a bunch of filler.
Yeah.
You can just tell exactly what it is that you want to tell. You know, this one weird day when, you know, this guy pulled his dick out on the muni bus.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just a random thing that you sometimes think about. And you wouldn't write a whole book about, but
yeah.
You could pull off a poem about and stuff like that. It works.
For sure. What's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you?
That's hard to say.
Recently.
I mean, recently? Huh. Not very much crazy, I don't think. I mean,
I'm not really good at interview questions.
Yeah, no. I'll think of things on my way home or something, but my life's kind of boring.
Yeah.
For the most part.
I like boring. I'm really boring. Like, but I think there's a lot of beauty in the mundane. Like, my favorite things are just laying in bed on, like, a Saturday and, like, reading a book and maybe taking a walk eventually. And
yeah, no, that's my kind of day, totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think that what I find crazy is, like, humans and the fucking shit that they say and think and do.
Yeah, and that's so what I want to hear about.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I work with old people, so it can be a whole range of things, but I was working with for, like, 6 months this year with a couple rather than just one person. So I was, like, living inside this relationship of people that had been together 45 years harboring resentments.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Don't, like, get old and get sick with somebody who's really resentful towards you. Don't do it. because it's a fucking nightmare.
I can't imagine.
And I not only, like confirmed all my worst suspicions about marriage and all my fears in relationships and stuff, but also, like, made me realize some things about the way I grew up and the way I maybe tend to see things or tend to undervalue the woman's opinion in mm-hmm. things. Like, in my own relationships, that's obvious, sadly. But, like, I was dealing with such a, like, the stereotypical overbearing wife.
Yeah.
And it would just, like, infuriate me. Like, how dare she? Mm-hmm. But it was actually totally normal to him, and it's totally normal to a lot of people, but I realized how much I came from a very male-dominated mm-hmm. background.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had a lot of realization of my own in that situation.
What were some of the things that they would say to each other? Like, who were they both sick?
The problem was, is that she was a super nice person on her own. Mm-hmm. Brilliant, in fact. And we had tons of things to talk about and stuff like that. She was a professor and their house was full of books. So, you know, there's tons of, with both of them, intellectual, great conversation. But he had gotten sick and then she found herself, like, in the caregiver role and absolutely couldn't, like, total meltdown. Like, I can't be a caregiver,
mm-hmm.
which is so bizarre to me, who I'm, like, the super trying to take care of everybody. I'm always trying to save everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so she would try to micromanage things. You and I were just talking about not liking to be managed. I hate to be micromanaged. Like, just drives me insane. And so she would be like, if he was supposed to take a pill 4 times a day, she would want it taken to the minute that she had scheduled it out and really thought, like, it has to be that, and would scream at us. And if we were, like, out taking a walk, she would drive and find us.
Oh, my God.
And I would try over and over to explain. I've worked in hospitals and facilities, and nobody actually gets it on the minute that, you know, that's not, the doctor doesn't expect that. That's not possible in life.
Right.
You take it 4 times a day. You don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's a pill, right? It's not like it has a timer on it that expires. Like, oh,
nope.
Tick, 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 tick. Time to take another one. Otherwise you're going to die.
No. So we would have these conversations. I mean, I don't even know what they were. Cause I mean, really I'm not in the place to argue, but except I would just be losing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, cause she'd be, well, if it's not taken at this time, that means we have to get up. Like, no, you just take it before you go to bed. You don't have to get up out of your sleep. You know, over and over we'd have these kinds of conversations. And it's just like, anytime you're in the middle of somebody else's relationship, family relationships, whatever, it's so weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, even living at home and, like, being inside my parents' relationship,
yes.
I don't want to talk about it on this podcast, but yeah, it's like, how do you live? Like,
right.
How, I don't understand you guys at all, but I think a lot of relationships are like that. They're just built on weird things and you kind of get used to them and you just end up settling because what else is out there?
That is what my mother's relationship is like. And I actually have been going through some problems with my mother behind that, because last year they came to visit. They come to visit and they buy a one-way ticket and they just stay as long as mm-hmm. they want.
Yeah.
In the middle, you know, in your life. Yeah. Just all up in it. Really, I'm about to be 45 fucking years old and I have not.
No, lived. You're not.
Yeah.
Oh my, I thought you were 35.
No, I haven't lived with my mother though since I was like 10 years old. When my parents split, I stayed with my dad, and then I left home really young. I came to San Francisco when I was 15. So, like, yeah, I really have no tolerance for, you know, living with your parents. I had never did that shit. So,
yeah.
And their relationship to me is just like how that couple was in it, but in a different way, but as crazy.
Yeah.
Totally crazy. Like, two people that are around each other 24 hours a day, never apart, and just yell at each other. And I'm just like, what part of it? Like, what's appealing about this?
They don't have hobbies or anything. They don't go
All of them are together. They have been together for 35 years, and they have worked together every single day of that and spent a night apart. Literally.
They have a business together. That's crazy.
So they, like, build houses and stuff.
Wow.
And they were even living on a sailboat, like, smaller than this bedroom. Like, small.
They're hippies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, other people's shit. That's the craziest thing I know of.
Yeah, no. I agree with you. I think I've seen weird stuff happen or experience weird things, but generally speaking, people are just, I don't understand them. That's a big reason about why I write, like trying to make sense of things people do and things people say and relationships, I guess. I don't know. Just trying to understand it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Relationships. And how I guess I thought for the longest time, even as rebellious as I always was, I wanted to make my mom happy on a certain level. So I thought, you know, in her world, you have to have a boyfriend.
Right.
But I realize now, like, that's because she feels threatened or something. Like, so it's really weird.
Threatened that,
like, by me or by, like, women, other women.
Getting attention from your dad?
So I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. She has gotten angry because she felt like my stepfather was paying too much attention to me and my son once. One of the times they stayed with us forever. I'm like, really? Because I'm actually only nice to him because he's with you and you're my mother. Because other than that, I wouldn't even speak to the guy, quite honestly. We would never be friends.
Right, yeah.
It's somebody we knew before my parents were together and I didn't like, so what?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Like, you're putting me in some shit that has nothing to do with me.
I think, a lot of it is pure projection, like why people say hurtful things or just do strange oddball things is because they have their own insecurities and they're just shooting them out there into the world to whoever will listen, basically.
I know. And so we walk through that all day, every day, but we don't really take it in because we're like, this bitch is crazy. But when it's your own family, particularly your mother, you find, and you know, it takes a long time before you even realize that you've actually been taking this shit in and carrying it around like you did something wrong or something. And then you realize that's just all their shit.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I know. I feel like I'm definitely a product of my parents. Like, I'm just like both of them.
Me too.
In, like, ways that I'm not really happy about. I mean, some aspects, totally. Like, my dad is kind of a contrarian, and I'm totally that way, too. And just, like, fuck you, I want to do it this way. And, like, you guys are stupid. Like, you know, just kind of, like, taking your own path and, you know, trying to prove your opinions. And I guess that's a good thing, but there are things about, like, them that I'm just trying to unlearn that shit.
Yeah, like, exactly. So much so. So, I mean, yeah, I'm more like my father in a lot of ways, like, noticeable ways, I would say. And he was completely off his rocker, so that's not a good thing. But then it's the, it's like these little seeds in my brain that I feel are really like my mother. Like, you know, the male-centric thing I was saying and, you know, just being so unworthy all the time. Like, she's like this amazing lady. She's beautiful, can cook, can sew anything, like leather jackets and pants. Like, she can sew anything. She paints, she played guitar, she gardens, like builds houses. She's a carpenter.
She's a DIY guy.
Like, all these things, like every do-it-yourself thing that you can think of, yeah. she can do it with ease. Like,
yeah.
And figured it all out by herself, you know, didn't go to school for it. Yet she's the most insecure person ever. You know what I mean? So how do you, I mean, I got it. I got it bad, the same shit. It doesn't matter how many people are like, oh, that's great, I love what you do, or whatever. At the end of the day, I always go home and I'm like, I'm a loser, I suck, you know?
Is that human? I mean, how many people go home and they're like, yeah, I'm the shit?
I don't know. We, you know, everybody right now, because the whole Robin Williams thing is talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as artists, we always think we suck.
Yeah.
Is that across, I mean, working with lawyers and shit, I didn't feel like they did.
Yeah.
I'm the shit, but.
They're reptilians. Shout out to my lawyer friends.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Certainly among all my writer friends, we have this conversation and, you know, it's fucking real though. When you see like, you see dude do that, and then you're just like, really? I could actually have the money, the family, all the things, and really be there. I mean, everybody's asking themselves that every time. I watched the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie today, which sucked, by the way. But another one, like, you know, he really... If you're going to be an actor, you couldn't be a better fucking actor than that, right? And that everybody adored. And still, you know, he's still torturing himself every fucking day. So I don't know how we get around that. I really don't. But I want to figure it out.
I think part of it is just tricking yourself is what I try to do. Like, you know, I'm not that bad. I mean, I could be worse.
Yeah.
And that's not a great way to think about things, but.
Well, if you go to poetry readings, here's the thing. If you go to a lot of poetry readings, you know, 90% of it's horrible. So you pretty much do convince yourself, yeah, well, I'm the best one here, at least.
I know. I like doing that one reading with you, and at the end we're both like, yeah, we were the best.
Oh, totally. I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, the like... Do you think you might have ever read it one time before you got on a microphone?
Yeah,
reading?
Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
We fucking killed that.
Yeah, we did. We did. And also because I think, well, we both have really strong, like, personalities or personas or whatever.
I feel like we're not similar, but, like, sometimes I go up and I'm like, I'm reading, like, Cassandra right now. Like, I feel bad. Like, I don't want to jack her style.
No, I never thought that. Not at all.
We're just kind of tough.
I consider you very unique. And I was really happy when you read with me at my book release. And then I saw, like, the response of people that I know from, like, when I first started writing and stuff. All, like, liking your stuff a lot and everything. I don't know. I love that little networky stuff like that.
Yeah. You know? It's a beautiful thing. Yeah,
it is. It's really good.
What's your favorite reading you've done?
Oh, shit. I definitely have some.
What are you most proud of?
God, now my brain is frozen, but I certainly have had some where I'm just like, I killed that time. Like, that's it.
We're not mentioning
that's
the specific event.
That's what I want that to be. I want it to be, but I can't really think of which ones right now. I felt pretty good about all my book releases. I did the three, Pegasus, and Makeout, and Dog-Eared Books.
Yeah.
I felt really good about all three of those. I felt really good because I had picked out my readers, and every time I had a really solid lineup of people that I love, you know? And then I felt comfortable reading, like, having that book and everything. It felt pretty good, and I knew the material really well.
Yeah.
And each time, I read totally different pieces. So the fact that you know, I feel like so many people have, like, a couple pieces they rely on.
Yeah.
And that I could totally switch it up each and every time and do something different and still feel like it was strong and that I got a good response. I guess what was good about those is that I had really good audience response.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't stand the, like, really quiet, no applause, like, no. I just don't, I always feel kind of like, are we connecting? Is it working?
I don't like it when people clap.
Oh, see, we're opposite on that. Okay.
I'm just like, can you not?
That's funny. No, Scott says that too. SB Stokes says that too. And we just totally disagree. Because I like, well, one thing, I get going really fast. So that gives me, it makes me pause a bit. Because I distinctly remember my first ever reading. Everybody was like, you read so fast. It was like one long poem. It was like 12 poems. Yeah. You know? So it gives me that sort of like, okay, boom, moving on to the next story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I feel connected when people make noise.
Yeah.
So that's me. I like barroom, you know, like more rowdy audiences, if possible.
Yeah, I like a rowdy audience. I like when they laugh like that. Yeah. Hearing them laugh when I'm reading something, like, even if it, I wrote it kind of seriously. Like, I threw a little bit of something in there that I was hoping somebody would laugh. And when people laugh, that's, like, a great thing for me. But when they clap in between pieces, I'm just like, you're throwing me off.
Oh.
You're, like, kind of, not killing my vibe, but, like, the mood is changing. And, like, I'm, you know, I'm doing something and I want there to be silence in between poems so I can, you know, that's part of the poem too. Just like
that's
anticipating.
Exactly what Scott says, and we always disagree on that.
Yeah,
it's interesting to me. All right, I'm going to give the silences a chance. You have to in some venue. I mean, sometimes it's just that way.
Yeah,
I have to not take it as a diss.
Right. No, I mean, there have been times that I'm just like,
yeah, hello.
Are you guys awake?
I know.
Do you hate me?
I know, and then somebody comes up afterwards and says, you're amazing, you made me cry, or whatever, you know? Yeah. And a lot of times, my stuff is really fucking sad. Like, I would, my thing is, I would rather be more funny than I am. Mm-hmm. I think I struggle with that. Like, to me, the perfect book or poem is, like, funny and sad. It's, like, so tragic, you have to laugh kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I pull that off. I would like to be funny more, but sometimes people do laugh when it's just, like, so bad, and I'm like, really? Oh, my God. I don't know how to take that.
Maybe they just feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's like
they're
like,
nervous. They're laughing because they don't know what else to do. They don't want to cry, so they're laughing.
Yeah, that's okay. It's okay, people. You can do that.
What are you reading? What have you been reading?
I have been reading. I just started this Almanac of the Dead book because.
Oh shit! That sounds great.
Tomas Moniz was asking if people read it so there could be like a book club, and I love friggin' book club stuff. So I was like, I'm gonna get that book and read it. But I only read a few pages. Before that, I read Book of Poetry by Jason Biani. Do you know him?
No.
Dude.
Contemporary or?
Yeah. He's well known in slam circles. Like, okay. He's a veteran of slam circles. But he's, like, amazing poet. Mm-hmm. And you, being a hip-hop head like me, will love it.
Yeah.
He's a real, like, to-the-core hip-hop head, too. And I knew I would like the book because I've heard him many times perform, and I've every single time been like, God damn, now that's how you, you know, that's how you write a poem. So, but the book blew me away. I was at work day before yesterday, and I bought two poetry books at the National Poetry Slam over the weekend, and it was Sam Sachs, who also I love and adore. I mean, he's so talented and just amazing on every level. And Jason's. And then I loved Sam's. Love it. It's a really good book. Highly recommend it. But something about Jason's, like, I was in the bank with my old guy signing papers, and I started reading it. I was totally going through, like, the full range of, like, oh, I want to talk to somebody about this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm laughing out loud.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, like, stabbing me in the heart. All the good things that you want.
Yeah.
You know? In poetry books, it's hard to get.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like, in terms of reading poetry, I'd rather read my friend's writing than to read, like, most contemporary poetry. Yeah. Like, I'm just not interested for whatever reason.
I've been trying to, just because I'm tired of being the one that's like, who is that? I don't even know who that is, you know? Because I'm always, like, sort of least educated person in the room. And yeah. then I always am like, I don't even know who the fuck that is. Or, like, I get a blurb written about me comparing me to a poet and I don't even know who it is.
Yeah, that's kind of
embarrassing. So I've been, like, buying a lot of poetry to sort of educate myself. I have tons of poetry. But I definitely... It's my friends' books that, you know, I'm excited about. And both of those, Sam and Jason, those are books that I was really excited about because I hear them. I go to the open mics with them and stuff like that. And I know that both of them are just amazing. So yeah, it was cool getting two really good books.
It's kind of cool being compared to someone you've never read before because it's like, I obviously didn't jack their style.
Right.
We might have like similar upbringings or something or similar, you know, affinities towards things, but we're not, it's not like I read, you know, someone compared me to Lori Moore and I was like, I've never read her.
I've never read her either, so.
But I picked up this book. I'm reading this. I have like 3 pages left and you are welcome to borrow this when I'm done. This is great.
Stories.
They're short stories, like, it's all about New York City, well, mostly about New York City, like, in the late 80s, early 90s, things are kind of dystopian, like, things were already dystopian in that era, but she makes things seem weirder.
Seems like I might have read one of these stories or read about it. It sounds familiar now that I'm looking at the
book. You probably have.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's great, though.
Cool.
I'm really enjoying this, and, I think it's interesting. Like, cool. I'll check them out and see what they're about, you know, and it's inspiring me to write more short stories.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good. Cause I really like your short stories.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
I've been working on short stories too. I've been doing more prose lately too. Cause that's what I started with. And I started doing the poetry and it just stopped. I have the same handful of stories just sitting there that I first started with.
Yeah.
And it's like I can't quite, to me, the editing and the putting together feels so overwhelming. So I'll work on it a tiny bit and then I back off it. But one of the stories is going to be this fall on Sam's Dad's
website. Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So yeah, story about my dad. Will be on there. And then something else. We're going to contact.
You're getting.
What was the other? God, I forgot.
I'm sorry.
It seemed like I had something else going on with the story, but I don't know. Maybe not.
What's your writing process like? Like, do you write in a notebook? Do you start typing right away? How do you get ideas? I mean, you get ideas from life, but.
Yeah. So. I started out writing only in notebooks, never could feel comfortable like I was going to type at first, although I do that now.
Yeah.
I'd say within like the last year, that's pretty new. So I have notebooks all over my room, but, and I still carry one all the time.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, my brain has been less focused, like less, I feel like I've been less able to tap into that. You know, that good sitting on bar in the shower, whatever it is where you hit your, it just comes into your brain and it's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels, I don't know. I probably always say that though, but it feels like that's harder to come by. And I want to get back to that. Just like my favorite pieces of my own are mostly things that I just wrote down in one take and didn't really edit a lot.
Yeah, I hear people say that all the time. I don't feel that way about my own stuff, but, like, I feel like sometimes I do. Yeah, it comes out organically, and it's just like, this is totally in the moment, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong. Lots of my stuff is not that way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff, like, there's quite a few in the book that were really old that got reshaped and cut down.
Yeah.
And then finally made the cut and turned into something, you know, stuff like that, too.
That is usually more interesting to me, to see how something just mutates over and over
again. I guess it's both equally interesting to me.
Yeah.
And especially when they kind of all come together.
Yeah.
Too, when you know the background between each thing. I mean, because some things are just like, and that's how I pretty mostly with the prose always feel. Like, it's just so many times. I feel like I put words, I reverse words a lot, or the order of words. I do these really inside out sentences, and I go back and I'm like, what in the hell? You know, over and over, like, wait, that's not how we talk.
Backwards, you know? That's awesome.
I can't really give you an example, but sometimes in poems, I leave it that way a lot of times.
Yeah.
You know, because it's sort of like, I don't use all the fancy ass language, but it does, you know, mix up the language a little bit.
Make I it like a little that. Different. Yeah. I'm not a fan. I mean, I am a fan of like interesting words, but like I tend not to use them because Laurie Moore uses like, you know, writerly literary words. And I'm just like, I have to look this up. I don't know what this means.
I have mixed feelings about it. I've always liked really straightforward writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also, like, I love to look in the dictionary and the thesaurus and stuff like that. I love words. So on the one hand, it might turn me off to something.
Yeah.
But if it's in a situation where I have the time and patience or whatever, then I like it. Does that make sense? Well, one of the ways, probably the way I write the most is that I meet with my friend MK Chavez.
Right.
Theoretically once a week. Our lives don't always allow that. But, and we write together. We read poetry to each other and then we just write. And so we do little like 15 minute timed write.
Yeah.
Free writes. So she's a person who loves crazy ass words and writes poetry that's often hard to understand and all the things that I might say I don't like, but see, I love it with her.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Because I learn all these new words and I learn all these new poets. She's always turning me on to poets that I would never normally listen to or like or pick up.
Yeah.
But then I end up liking it, you know? So there's
Your MK Chavez is like my Jesse Prado.
Okay.
He's the same way for me. Like he's like, you don't read enough. You need to read more. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I totally do.
That's funny.
He's always like pushing me. He like loaned me all these books.
Oh,
I have all these books on top of
my that friend. I've always been that friend all my life because I always really, I mean, like, I've never had a boyfriend that reads books or writes or any of that.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
So I've always been that person with most of my friends. Like when I was a teenager and I discovered Bukowski, I would make my friend sit down and listen to me read it because I was so excited about it. You know, I was always a reader, but at that time I wasn't really around that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
None of my friends were readers at all.
Yeah.
Right? We were drunks pretty much. And so I discovered this and then I would just read to them until they got interested. And then, you know, the way it worked is like my best friend ended up with a guy that really kind of made her read a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think he gave her reading lists.
Yeah. Like that.
But see, for me, I grew up out in the fucking woods with no TV. So once I learned how to read, that's all I had. So I always knew I would always be in situations I didn't want to be in with a bunch of adults and there would probably be a bookshelf. So I would just go to that. You know what I mean?
That's
so
tight.
I read a lot of stuff that if I would have lived somewhere where I had more to do, I wouldn't have been reading Steinbeck and Hemingway when I was like 12, but I did because I was out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
So, though, you know, I wasn't particularly like in love with those books or whatever. My favorite book at that time, now it turns out, you know, he was a poet and all this. And I didn't know any of that then, but it was Peary Thomas, Down These Mean Streets. And it was a memoir, see? Mm-hmm. And I read that book over and over. It's like a really gritty memoir about growing up in Spanish Harlem.
Okay.
Back in the day, super day. But it's all the same shit as now. It's, you know.
It's funny how that
and
is.
And gangs and prison and all the same shit. But still to this day, it would be like one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
It just says everything about me. I love memoir. I love people's lives. The grittier, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
I had a similar experience in public school because I was fucking bored out of my gourd, and we, like, I was in a fifth grade class where the teacher was just waiting to retire. Like, a lot of the teachers at my school were just waiting for retirement, and
that's how my experience was too.
So I would just read books. I'd pick books from the bookshelf, go to the library, and just read books during class and get shit from it from the teacher. But it's like, you taught this math lesson 10 times already. Like, we've done this page of math, you know.
Yeah.
We've done this worksheet before. I'm not learning anything. Let me read my Judy Blume. Like,
yeah, I love Judy Blume. Yeah, don't even front on Judy Blume.
No.
Loved it. Yeah, well, for me, I learned to read really late, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote my little memoir part about my traumatic years of special ed when I finally taught me how to read, though. And as soon as I learned how to read, that it did change everything because I just read like crazy.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And I was terrible in school and other subjects. So the only reason I actually did graduate from high school, really, is because I read so much. Mm-hmm. And I could always just be like, I'll read a book. And I was at a high school where most people couldn't even read. I mean, it was alternative school.
Yeah.
The standards were really low.
Yeah, yeah. I have a bunch of friends who went to alternative school.
Well, the thing about my alternative school, it completely changed my life. And actually, you know how you figure everything out in hindsight, but it actually made me self-educate myself in an unexpected way because I ended up at this alternative school in San Francisco. I was like a skinhead chick, right? And it was an all-black school, and the principal was like she was a Black Panther, connected with Black Panthers, with all kinds of super left-wing politics. And we were all just total knuckleheads there, but she would bring Angela Davis to our little bitty school.
Whoa.
Alice Walker, Nelson Mandela's daughter came to our school, Ron Delms, Willie Brown gave me my diploma. Like,
oh my God.
So Alice Walker came to our school. Santana came to our school. Like, all kinds of crazy. And it was a tiny little school. So at the time, it's not like I sat there and had some great epiphany or anything. Like, I wanted to be smart because I just wanted to, you know, go drink and smoke weed and fuck around with the guys at school and whatnot. But when Alice Walker came, I like read her book. I went home, read Color Purple in a Night, went and got all her other books. Basically, I would like steal books because I had no money, you know. So I went and stole all her books. I read on the back who she liked, which was like Toni Morrison,
Zora Neale Hurston.
I went and stole all their books.
Mm-hmm.
And that sent me on. It was also at the end of the 80s when hip hop was super, you know, political, you know, everything was Africa Medallions and Public Enemy was coming out and all this kind of stuff. So I got really into African American history and literature, but it sort of happened by accident, a lot of because of the music, you know, and because I started this direction of reading. Toni Morrison changed my mind, my life, as much as Charles Bukowski, and it was in sort of the same way. And I always say, well, you know, I hate picking favorites of anything, but those two were the most, because she, like, still fucking blows my mind, right?
Yeah.
She's an amazing fucking writer, so smart, and there's just some parts of it that just, I don't know, get me in this really emotional way. And then he was like, oh, if he can do that, I can do that. And nobody ever made me feel like that before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could be part of, you know, I could be a writer, basically.
Yeah.
So they're two, like, complete opposites. But that was what did it for me. And then since then, I think always, I was always reading, no matter how crazy my life was, you know. I was in a lot of really abusive relationships and in and out of trouble a lot, but I was always reading.
That's great.
I've carted around some of those same books that I got when I was in high school all these years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Zora Neale Hurston, Their Eyes Were Watching God is a book I think about probably every day.
I know, right?
And I read it in the 10th grade.
Yeah.
And I I should probably read. I've been thinking like that's going to be one of the next books I want to read.
Yeah.
Because I want to revisit it, but I think about it every day.
Yeah, no, she was so ahead of her time in so many ways. The way she lived her life and her interests and documenting all this folklore and all this stuff. It was really, it's really incredible to think about now when shit is so fucked up now. You know what I mean? She was something amazing. Toni Morrison too. Like, cause you read stuff and at that time it affects you. And then many years go by when you reread that, you're going to still love it. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
You know, so many other things are not that way. But a really good book, it is. Because I finally took a literature class a few years back. I'm still trying to graduate from City College.
Yeah.
And we read Their Eyes Were Watching God in there. And it was a trip, like, just to watch the responses of the really young, like, fresh out of high school kids, most of them and stuff. But for me, it was really, like, it had been over 20 years or whatever since I read it, and it still
feels like coming home. Up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned slam poetry earlier, and I want to ask you or just talk to you about slam poetry because people talk so much shit about slam poetry, and I don't understand why. I don't get the hate for it. Is it like academics versus slam poets? Yeah. It's like a division.
It's one of those divisions. And there's a couple reasons why I think. One, because most of them, like myself, are terrified of being judged. It's like everything we hate in life, right? Mm-hmm. And then somebody putting a number on it. Although I've been starting to slam a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also that it feels when you go to, especially like open mic slams, it feels like there's a formula, a correct formula.
Mm.
And so how many times do you have to hear the same, you know, there's, you know, like rape or that kind of thing, or I'm gay and was discriminated against, or I'm whichever race and was discriminated against usually, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those sometimes after, you know, three or four, and if the person is screaming, which happens a lot in slam poetry, I think that's another reason why people hate it. You know, there's like reasons I really get why people hate it.
Yeah.
Because it turns me off too. Mm-hmm. I don't want anybody screaming at me. Your words should speak for themselves and be strong enough. And then it's not a good poem if you have to yell it. Right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be, I personally hate form. I don't ever write in form. And if your slam turns into just another form where there's like a correct, there's this particular way the voice rises and they ask the question, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's a poet, I think her name is Meg Day, and she did this poem years ago when I was pretty new in the thing, where it's like how to write a slam poem, and she just does all the things that are the stereotypical slam poem. It's hysterically funny. I looked for it recently on YouTube to show somebody to explain that's why people hate slam poetry.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find her. I should just ask her. She's on Facebook. But so I think that those are the reasons why, because it feels sometimes like, well, okay. So I went to the Berkeley Slam last week.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So, and I dragged Tomas, and he's never slammed, and I've slammed exactly once before, but I did pretty good. And even though I was terrified and wanted to puke, I hung in there for a couple rounds, and I lost to, you know, Toaster and Jason, who are incredible, like, amazing slam poets, who beat everybody, so who cares? You know, you can't feel bad off losing to them, right? But, so I lost at this one. I don't know who this girl is, but to some girl who did, I felt like, the, like, totally predictable slam poem. It was just like you looked at a book on how to write a slam poem and wrote it. That's what it felt like to me.
She watched the YouTube video.
And, you know, she got 2 tens, which is pretty unheard of, right? And so I still, you know, walked away with some money in second place. But nonetheless, it just was like, that's why people hate it. Because I'm not going to change. I'm not going to do that in order to win. And I feel like you have to a certain extent. So that's why people don't like it.
See, this brings up things that I did not know about slam. I thought it was just a style of reading a poem or telling a story. I didn't know it was a competition.
Oh, it's, yeah.
It's always a competition? It's always a
competition.
Okay. So
that's the problem.
I hear people talking about, like, I fucking hate slam poetry. Oh, listen to the slam poet at the poetry reading. But I mean, that's not what it is. It's not just a style. It's like you have to be in a contest.
It's always a contest.
Okay. Because I was thinking, I think I do slam poetry. I mean, and what
people have always told me since I started that my style is most like slam. And I always have been like, well, yeah, I'm a hip hop head. So all my roots come from rap. So slam comes from rap and I come from rap. So, of course, that makes sense.
Right. And I think I'm definitely influenced by hip hop when I write. I mean, I'm not, people have told me that it feels like rap when mm-hmm. I read sometimes. And I love that. But, yeah, I thought that's just kind of what slam was, like hip hop influenced poetry. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think what I know about slam or what I thought I knew about slam was from watching an episode of Moesha where she goes.
The thing is that it kind of is like Moesha. You know what I mean? It's like, I have so many friends in the slam scene that I really love and adore.
Mm-hmm.
But there is sort of like the, and now they make like car commercials for BET with the look and the sound of like, you know, the black African American people who are not, you know, who are educated and dress a certain way and have the nice hat on or whatever. It's like this, like, Love Jones was the movie, right? So a lot of people, it kind of is like that a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's not really, not here anyhow. It might be other places, but here it's actually so diverse.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the competition part, I think. Okay, so I got to know all these people from going to the New Shit Show,
mm-hmm.
which is an open mic that was started by some kids that do a lot of slam. I call them kids. They're grown-ass people, but I'm old.
Yeah.
But, so you know, they move in the slam circles, they slam, whatever, but they're also really good writers.
Yeah.
And so it's just a open mic where you have to bring something new each time, which is actually makes it the best open mic because, you know, otherwise you have to hear that person that comes every fucking 2 weeks and reads the same goddamn shit, right? That everybody's heard. So this way, it gives you something to write for
mm-hmm.
and, you know, hear people's new stuff. So, and it's very diverse as far as what you might hear up there. So from going to that is how I kind of got to know, like Toaster, who's now my roommate or
right,
whatever.
I
met him just from New Shit Show. And a lot of those people. And really, that whole circle, they're, like, really good poets. Mm-hmm. Like, you can buy their book, and it's, the writing is really good. Like, I'm just sometimes like, fuck, I would never come up with this.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the race stuff that Jason talked about in that book and stuff is just, like, really well done. It's really, like, this is how introspective poetry should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how we were just talking about, like, how we just trip off people and stuff like that. He's just doing that in this beautiful, amazing way through the book, talking about relationships, talking about, like, our hunger and, you know, how we fill it up with drugs and sex and all the things that we do. And really, that's what poetry is always about, all that shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but in a really, you know, a way that really works. Yeah.
Do you feel like we're all telling the same story, but telling it in a different way?
I started thinking that when I was reading that and thinking, well, I have lots of poems on this topic, but they're much more basic or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're more, you know, they're, this is like a little snippet of talking about, you know, that
it's
sort of
different
hole inside that we're always trying to fill up or whatever. So yeah, we are. We're telling the story of being human,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We're telling the story of like death and sex and all the things. Like I said, he talks about the hunger a lot. The stuff that I definitely write about this a lot. Like,
yeah.
what I'm always wanting something. The void. It's food. I want, you know, the kitchen guy that I always write about, that I want to keep having an affair with, the whatever it is. There's always some shit, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I think we all do, definitely.
Do you think writers or people who make things, do art things, not just for utilitarian purposes, but just for the sake of it, do you think there's a difference in how we're wired? Like, so many of my friends who make art, like, we all have, like, mental illnesses of various degrees. Like, are we just, like, this is just what we do because we're built this way? Like,
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, honestly. Because I did spend so much of my life not being creative at all and being really fucking miserable. Like, right. Really miserable. Yeah. You're really miserable when you are in relationships and you communicate by beating the shit out of each other. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, something's really wrong. And I remember, as usual, because I'm always trying to save everybody else, I didn't really figure that out about myself so much as looking at another friend of mine who has the seemingly like perfect life, you know, really nice husband, big house, good job, blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. But it was totally obviously miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And then so it just seemed so obvious to me, oh, we're all really creative people that don't do what we always were supposed to do. Like, we got so caught up in all this other stuff. Like, we're supposed to have a husband. Mm-hmm. Our clock is ticking. We're supposed to have kids, whatever the stupid shit. That we didn't do anything. I mean, I remember when we were kids and she would paint and play the bass and things, and it just all went along the wayside. And then sure enough, we're not in contact anymore, but she started making art and making jewelry and doing this really cool, actually really nice stuff. And, like, it just seemed like a complete difference, like a complete and total difference. You could tell that she was not miserable anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when women get divorced and they start, like, making quilts or something. They realize, like, oh, I have a passion for painting. Like, I've always wanted to do watercolors, you know?
I think that, I don't really know. I don't know. I'm all questions. I have no freaking answers. But I do think that some of us, it's like survival. Like, we really...
You have to.
Yeah. Like, we do have to. You feel
compelled.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally feel compelled. Yeah. Like, I have... It's like bile. I have to fucking get it out. Yes. Like, I just have to...
Yep.
Get it out, and writing is the way to do it.
Right. There's people that write, you know, I mean, there's... journalists, and there's all kinds of writers that do it for all kinds of reasons, academic writers and stuff. I mean, I feel like I'll die without writing, but I don't know how to write an essay. I like don't even know how. So there's all what other people's motivations. Formula. That's a different thing. You know how I feel about formulas.
Yeah.
You know?
But like, if you learn the formula, you can fuck with it your own way,
right,
and break it and like do right. whatever you want with it. Yeah.
I get that now, but it's taken me a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's taken me a long time to figure all that out and stop being so rebellious about it that I can't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So I have a reading tomorrow with Jennifer Blowdryer.
Oh, yeah.
And that's another thing I've been reading lately is a couple of her books. And, I think you would like her writing.
I like her a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think she likes me.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, no. I don't think that's true.
I think we're just like, we don't know how to talk to each other or something. That's
probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't get that from her. Because we were at your reading together. We drove over there. I didn't get that. But whatever. Who knows? Women are crazy.
Yeah.
But, no, she, her writing, what I like is, you may have this in common. It's like, she's writing about kind of crazy, edgy things or whatever, but she knows how to write. Like, she is educated in how to write. Like, she does know the formulas and the blah, 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 but does whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. And I like how it comes across very readable, not pretentious, whatever, and with a strong voice.
She's so funny. Like, she read this interview with some, I don't know who the person was. It was some guy, and he was kind of, he was like a twin. He had a twin brother or something, and he was like a party kid in like 70s or something like that, 70s or 80s. And she read an interview she conducted with him, and the way she read it, I was cracking up the entire time. Like, I think she's really great. Yeah. I'll definitely read her writing. Like,
yeah, I think you'd like it.
Yeah.
I think you guys have some similarities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She seems like a fascinating person. I just have to learn how to talk to people. I don't know. I'm like so awkward.
Yeah.
I'm always like, oh, they don't like me.
I'm the same way. I'm the same way. And, actually, because I did come, you know, I came to San Francisco like a runaway wanting to be in the punk scene so bad in the early 80s. And those older women, like, you know, that little bit ahead of me generation, they were not very fucking nice.
Okay? Yeah, no.
To say, you know, punk rock was not very nice.
No.
It was not very welcoming. So, you know, I still have that. Like, I was texting with Joel last night because he's reading with me tomorrow too, and I was like, oh, I'm still like the 14-year-old kid trying to hang out with the cool punk rockers or something, and like some part of me, you know, it's hilarious. Totally absurd, but you know, it's still there.
Yeah.
There's all this like, I'm more punk rock than you shit, you know? And she does not act like that, but I have known many people in that set.
She's a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, I totally can see that. Yeah. Totally.
But not, I don't think she's scary, but like, she seems like, I don't know, like, I have to like pay homage or something.
Right.
Her, you know?
That's how it is with those scenesters that have been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do that either, because I am allergic to kissing ass. I just cannot do it. So.
Yeah.
Like, I've learned how to be nice now and social, you know, but it's been hard.
Yeah.
I can't even lie.
Yeah,
I'm not, it doesn't come to me naturally. No, to
me either.
But,
I'm really just a bitch. And like, I try really hard to like, be nice to and like, give people second chances.
Yeah.
But, like, people do things that piss me off. And like, I don't hold a grudge, but I'm just like, I don't really want to fuck with you. Like,
yeah.
And I need to get over that,
I think,
to a degree.
To a degree, right.
I think it's good to be discerning.
Yeah. I think so. I do, too. Absolutely. Because, fuck, who wants to get... I mean, you can't let certain people too close to you.
Period. No,
no. You can't. But, you know, it's always better to be nice, but, like, just keep certain people at arm's length. You give them a second chance, but you just know, like, they go in that category.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just trying to explain that to somebody about somebody we know.
Oh, God.
Like, oh, we're cool, but we're just not that cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this writing community, whatever the hell that we're part of, you have to deal with a lot of people. We all do these readings and magazines and all these things,
mm-hmm,
that overlap, and it's just better if you get along with everybody. So,
mm-hmm,
you have to know how to do that in a way you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And most of us are really fucking socially awkward. I'm so tired of hearing everybody like, I'm sorry, I'm just really socially awkward. I'm fucking socially awkward. Don't tell me about socially awkward.
Yeah.
Do you know what it took for me to get out of the house today and even come around you people?
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, totally. Totally. Yeah.
It's always the cry.
It's good to try.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I feel better after I come home and I'm like, good job.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Because when you don't, you feel like kind of disappointed in yourself. Like, I do that.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of did that recently. Like, I went to something and like, I just didn't want to talk that reading for Holly Hardy. Like, I was in a really bad mood that day.
I was kind of not very. Yeah, I was.
I was like, I'm just, I feel like shit. Like, I don't really. I wanted to do the thing, you know, to read, but I felt weird about it. Like, I just felt
Yeah.
Just felt in a bad mood. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just wanted to go home right afterward. Like, I not like so social.
I am getting much better at saying, okay, I feel like that, but I said I was going to be here, so I'm going to put that away, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to go do this, and then I'm going to come right back and feel just as bitchy, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to go and put a fucking smile on it and do it.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it works, but, you know, I've had my ugly moments, too, the throwing drinks at the...
Who'd you throw drinks at?
Sixth from the bar, the open mic, you know?
Oh, my God.
I was like, yeah, no, sometimes... I like old attitudes creep back up, and I survived in this world like by having that mean mug,
yeah,
and going through, you know, I mean, so I forget sometimes I don't need to do that anymore, mm-hmm. you know, like you don't have to act like a hard ass, you don't have to fucking fight and all that shit.
Yeah.
And sometimes a few too many whiskeys and I am like right back there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But yeah. I'm working on being a nice person. And it's working. I mean, I have a lot more nice people in my life, I have to say.
For sure. Yeah, I feel the same way. Yeah. Things are kind of falling into place. Well, not really, but...
Yeah, it is for a while. And then, I mean, I just kind of went through a big depression thing of, like, I just get... I don't know. I just beat myself up terribly. I had all these readings and all this stuff going on, and then it just kind of stopped. And then yeah. I just spent way too much time at home thinking about it and just coming up with all bad things. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's rough.
When that happens to me, I just end up watching a lot of Netflix.
I like, do that too, but...
It's just something distracting to, like, keep me from not, you know, because I'll spiral and spiral and spiral. And
I started doing it, and I really haven't been like that for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
It's usually a thing in my life, a breakup or whatever, that, you know... starts off some kind of thing, but not this was different. I yeah. think it's because I'm trying to break out of my old patterns of dealing with shit like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so it's more when you are depressed, it's harder
mm-hmm.
to get out of. It's realer. It's really like, okay, no, I'm not gonna do this.
Yeah. What are you excited about happening recently?
See, that's the problem. I kind of reached this point where I was like, oh, okay, I did all that. Now what am I looking forward to? Like, I don't know how to function when I'm not working on the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something I need to work on. Like, I don't know how to just be. I always have to be looking forward to a next event in my life, whatever it is. Or I just am like, oh, fuck, why get out of bed?
I feel the same way. And, yeah, if I'm not working on something...
Yeah.
I just feel like shit. Like...
Exactly.
Yeah. I've been... Recently, like the last, I think like starting the summer, I started doing all these different things at once. I have like all these different projects going mm-hmm. on. I'm always busy.
I know.
And like, I think I need to be always busy with things like this, like doing this podcast, writing HTML Giant, like working on three different books. Like I'm nice. Just trying, Yeah. If well, I don't I'm do realizing it, I'm gonna die.
If I'm doing all that, then I feel totally overwhelmed all the time.
Right.
And if I'm not, then I'm despondent.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel so, I'm super overwhelmed.
Well,
but I'd rather be right, overwhelmed than so. Not doing anything.
I'm realizing that slowly. But when I'm in it, I'm like, oh, I have to clear. Like, no, I can't.
Right. You're looking
but
for it.
I mean, maybe that's good. Maybe that's how shit gets done. But it's hard to understand that. About yourself.
Yeah. And I'm never just, like, normal. It's always nothing yeah. or everything.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
When it rains, it pours. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. So I think my fall is going to be pretty busy. I mean, right now in my life, I have a reading tomorrow. That's the only thing I have until all the way up to, like, Lit Crawl. And then I'm planning a mini book tour in November.
Are you reading at Lit Crawl?
I am, yeah.
Where are you reading?
Well, my publisher, Manic D, will have a reading. I read with her last year. I've read with them, and I'll read with her. And I'm going to also read with Paul Corman Roberts, the Full of Crow, but you're not supposed to do that. So I'm just reading what...
I like both of those people.
Yeah, well, of course I'm stoked to read with Manic D. I mean,
yeah,
so many great writers. I'm really happy to be on that press. It would be good.
That's awesome.
Good reading. Yeah, I think Bucky Sinister is going to do it, and Daphne Gottlieb, and, you know, heavy hitters in the scene or whatever.
Yeah.
But Full of Crow, that's like, those are the people that I read my first ever stuff with, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's exciting too in a whole nother way.
Yeah. Be like a homecoming.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's really fun.
Yeah. It should be good.
Are
you going to read?
No one's asked me.
Yeah, it's kind of, I didn't get asked until the last minute she threw me, kind of slid me in there
mm-hmm.
last year, but I was never asked before and I was always a little bit like...
Yeah,
I'm not in with that crowd yet.
I'm feeling a little sour grapes right now, yeah. To be honest. Mm-hmm. It's all good.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know who all curates shows for it or any of it, really.
Maybe I'll just like.
I care more about Beast Crawl because I'm just.
Okay. No, Beast Crawl is all awesome.
About Oakland.
Yeah.
That's us. That's like, to me, that's more important, really.
Yeah.
That's our people.
That's how I feel. Yeah. Yeah, Beast Crawl was great, and I didn't get to see any of my friends read.
No, me neither.
We all read at the same time.
I didn't see one of my friends, so mm-hmm. don't feel bad. Same thing. Well, I went to see some of my slam friends, because yeah. they read before me, but all of us, all Punk Hostage, all Scott, everybody, mm-hmm. we all read at the same time, so that's how that goes. But we'll read together plenty more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put stuff together, I guess. See, I'm always the one that's like, I don't want to curate stuff. I just like to show up and read. But maybe I need to change my attitude about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have a great space. Like,
I'm going to do a thing at my house.
Yeah.
For sure, coming up. But you know, the last thing didn't go so well.
I know. And you know what Mark and Jason were saying? It's because I... wasn't there to help.
I mean, it did feel like that, I have to tell you. It really did. Like, you're a hustler. I was saying that to them. Like, Alexandra's a hustler. She puts shit together and the shit works. Okay? And, I mean, I don't know Jason that way. I don't think he really does a lot of curating. Or, well, I don't know.
No,
he did. They did do that reading. They did that reading that
yeah.
was good for a long time. So
yeah, he does a lot of stuff.
I think that particular time.
That day, too. Yeah. Like, I read somewhere. I was reading in the city. Amy Berkowitz had a reading that day.
Yeah.
And there was probably, like, a bunch of shit happening.
Yeah, no. There's way too many readings that are like that where there's, like, four things on the same night. And there's no way you're going to see your people are not going to be able to come.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's a good problem that we have these days that mm-hmm. there's so much going on. I don't think it's ever been like this where
no.
there's so much going on. But at the same time, it's pretty hard to find a date and be like, that's my freaking date.
Mm-hmm.
Show up.
Yeah.
I freaked out at each and every one of my readings. Like, oh my God, nobody's going to show up, you know? And each time it was fine. It was good. It could have been bigger, probably.
That's how I always feel.
It's the way it is. Yeah, it was good turnout. I sold
people
books.
Showed up for poetry. Yeah. Like, you have to be happy.
You have
that.
To be happy, right.
Yeah.
It's true. I know. Well, like, I was working with those old people, right? I was talking about the crazy couple. So yeah, they've been sort of in the literary world for many, many years, right? They were, like, didn't believe me when I would be talking about how many people come to poetry readings. They were just like, they really kind of thought I was lying. I think. It was super funny because I'd be like, no, really, sold out. Like, people turned away, you know, because I have read in things like that now that are, you know, I feel like Quiet Lightning and Evan Karp and stuff had a big part in just making it the hippest thing to do that people pay money. And then Jason said that night, and I think it's true too, like, you have to charge people for them to think it's, you know, worth something or something now. Like, people want to pay money for stuff or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The psychology of people, like, they feel like it's more worth it if they paid or something. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy, but it's true. Sadly.
I'd rather not pay for poetry, but...
Yeah. No, you can't go. A lot of these shows are like $10. How can you go to 3 shows a week? That's like a big chunk of money for most of us, right?
Yeah. We're all broke.
Exactly.
Like, we work at least 2 jobs, like our day jobs and the thing that we have to do to, like, live.
Yeah. For real.
You know? And some of us work more than 1 day job.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, no. No kidding. I mean, I do like, say, New Shit Show charges, but they pay their feature.
That's really cool.
Well, when you've been the feature and got paid, you really appreciate that. Yeah. And so they get a lot of big name people too. So
that's
cool. That's totally worth it because you get really good people. And if you're that person, you get money.
Yeah.
And that's fucking great because we don't get that much of that.
No. No.
I mean, I had really hoped to go on a rail tour this summer, as you know, and I just couldn't. Like, I just didn't have airfare.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking some miraculous way I was going to be able to put it together, and it has not happened.
I put all that shit on a credit card.
Yeah. Well, if I hadn't maxed everything out already, I would have too. I mean, I went to LA twice to read, and I mean, how much of that shit are you going to do? You did it. You went on your thing. And, yeah, but, like, how much are you going to do that? You're not going to do it again for a while, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah, and it's weird asking for donations from people in order to do stuff. Like, I mean, I've done that because I felt like I kind of have to or, you know, why not? Let's see what kind of response I get. But, like, it feels weird. Like, it feels kind of shitty.
Yeah.
You know, but it's...
See, I don't know how to do any of that. And I'm not saying it's not good. I'm saying I just need to figure out how to ask for shit. Like, so one of the things why I really like hanging out in these circles of the slam poets is that they are used to winning money and getting paid to do gigs. So... there's a different attitude there. They already know they're worth it.
Yeah.
So they're not afraid to ask to raise money to go on a tour or to go, you know, my friend Sonia Renee has lived for 10 years on poetry. She gets paid to go and perform all over the world.
Oh, my
God. Okay. So picture that and where we are, racking up a credit card going on a tour. So somewhere in between that... I would like to be, you know what I mean? And I'm trying to figure out how that is. Like, you can't do it only on selling books. I'm not really your academic poet, but then again, I'm sure I have something to teach the academics about life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like figuring out how to make that shit work. It can be done. People are doing it. You know, they're going, getting paid to go perform and teach classes and different shit. So I don't know. I'm just trying to get a little rub off on me.
Yeah.
On that note, just because I don't have a good day job.
No.
So I keep working a kind of shitty job just to have the flexibility to do this shit as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I don't know how. I mean, most people we know are like teachers and stuff, right? So they have big chunks of time free to put together readings and book tours and all this shit. And then
or
they go
do
back
freelance
and
or,
right.
You know. Right. I work in an office.
Yeah. I mean, I did. That's how I raised my kid. Mm-hmm. Working in an office. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah, the biggest event in my life right now is that my kid is leaving for college.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Trust me. Pretty unbelievable. But,
yeah, that's amazing. No,
I worked in offices for most of his life.
Yeah.
To make that happen.
Yeah.
Not because I wanted to. But I do miss the fact that I did write when I was sitting at a computer. I'm having a harder time doing that now.
I never have time.
Yeah, it depends where you work.
At this job, yeah. I'm like busy all day.
Yeah.
Constantly. At my old job, which I was miserable at,
that's I had the thing.
So much time.
I wrote a story about being at work in the office, like, losing my mind. Like, one of those fucking days where I'm just like, I hate everything. And I couldn't even hold it together. And so, just a short story about me, like, calling my friend and her being like, I'm going to bring you some pills so you can hold it together, right? And so, I took it in this creative writing class years ago. And they're all like, I don't know why she hates her job so much. It's like, you don't have to do anything. It's a perfect job. And yeah. I'm like, it seems like the perfect job until you fucking do that for years. And then you're losing your mind. Sitting in a chair at a fucking desk all day, every day with nothing to do.
Yeah.
Is not okay.
No.
Like, you will go bonkers.
Yeah.
And I was there.
Yeah.
So, I would like to have, you know, some kind of balance.
Same.
And you can't sit at a desk all day and then come home and sit at a desk all night. That's fucking hard, right?
I know. Yeah, when I was working at that other job, I had so much time to write during the day, and that was cool, but, like, yeah, I was totally losing my mind. All the other
bullshit that goes with it.
Yeah.
Well, boredom, I don't think we can handle that.
No.
That shit was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Or, like, trying to come up with stuff. Like, I'm the kind of person, if I have a task to do, I'm gonna plow through that shit. I'm gonna get it done, mm-hmm. you know? But trying to look busy type of shit, I have zero patience for.
Yeah.
I cannot play that game.
No.
At all.
No, that's what I would do at my old job. Like, I would just be on Facebook all day and, like, work on zines and stuff or work on ebooks. And, you know, when someone would come in my office, I would have to, like, pretend that I was doing something that I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. It's amazing how many people are filling downtown San Francisco every day doing that. It's
yeah.
Hilarious.
Everyone's just on Facebook.
Yeah. And before Facebook, it was like Craigslist and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Craigslist hookups from board secretaries.
Oh my God.
Hilarious. Yeah, Facebook. Wasting time on Facebook. If you want to feel like shit about yourself, do that all day.
Yeah.
Right?
No, exactly. Because you're just looking at other people's lives. And
then,
like,
at the end of it, you're like, all that time I could have been writing, I could have been editing, mm-hmm. I could have done something useful. That's everybody I know. That's everybody's gripe. And it's so true. Very guilty of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been good not being on social media so much recently. Like, I've definitely not been.
It's nice.
And I'm enjoying it. It's like a vacation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I have to remain present in some way. Otherwise, you know, all this work.
Oh, well, shit, the world is so goddamn. I mean, the world is always fucked up, but the last few weeks of news have just been beyond depressing. And then if you start reading fucking people's comments, you want to kill somebody. I just can't. Like, I just get so enraged.
Yeah.
Every time somebody says some dumb fucking thing, and I'm like, do people, like white people, okay?
Yeah,
white people. I fucking really would like to believe that you give a fuck about a kid getting shot by the cops walking down the street. I would like to believe that because my kid is wanting to walk down the street. You know what I mean?
Seriously.
And my nephew and my friends and the shit that people write. I'm just like dumbfounded. Like, what the fuck? Has the media really fucked you up so bad that you have this idea of, oh, every black kid is a thug? And I mean, this crazy ass shit. I read comments. I just, I can't.
It's tiring.
It's so emotionally exhausting. I get so mad. But I'll see, like guys I've known from when I was a teenager, and then they want to call Trayvon Martin a fucking thug. And I'm like, honey, he was going to college. I knew you when you were a teenager. Let's see. The last time we hung out, we were plotting to rob the pizza delivery guy and taking fucking acid in the back of somebody's van, you know?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? You get to call somebody a thug? You must be joking.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's all that media shit. It just got people so crazy. They have no humanity left in them. Never mind.
No.
I mean, it's just, oh, it just blows my mind. So that's all there is on social media right now. So yeah, probably don't look.
Yeah.
Because it's just sickening.
Yeah.
Sickening. So much of that shit. Ugh. I could go on, but I won't. But yeah, no, I mean, I have to post, I like feel responsible to post a little bit of political stuff because I feel really strongly about it. But at the same time, I don't even want to get those conversations started on my shit either. Because I just like, oh, and I know I've seen you like, okay, bye, unfriend. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
As soon as you say some ignorant ass shit on my thing, oh, you got to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, I just can't.
Yeah, it's like, why are we friends on
right.
social media if, like, you're a hateful person and you can't think outside of your own,
yeah.
you know, rigid point of view? Like, yeah. I don't want to know you.
That's why Sonya Renee gets paid big bucks to do her poetry, because she's, like, my go-to
mm-hmm.
for those kind of things. Like, Daniel Suarez, who yeah. I love, had a post about the recent days. There's been Robin Williams' death and, you know, Ferguson. The police they've gone out of their freaking mind. Like, all the soldiers from Iraq and everything are just saying, we would never just treat people like this. This is insane what the cops are doing, right? So anyways, he posted a thing about that, being a minority, having mental health issues, whatever. And the responses, oh my God, just so clueless, like just so totally insensitive and clueless. So I go to Sonya Renee's page, The Body Is Not an Apology. Are you familiar with that thing?
No. Because
your poem, The Body, you should totally hook up with her.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Go. I have some flyers in the car, but she has a worldwide thing. She's basically trying to make a social media site like Facebook, but completely, like, to help you empower yourself, feel good about your body, yourself, like, totally empowering
yeah.
and fuck the dumb shit. You're, like, all that bullshit is not welcome there. A space where people cannot feel bullied about whatever. So anyways, sure enough, I read her thing, and it's, like, perfectly encapsulating, like, nobody, you know, is a perfect person. Are you saying that young black men aren't allowed to be humans and be good and bad? You know, just, I don't know. She just worded it exactly right. Totally mm-hmm. simple and real. And like, who could read that and not say, oh yeah, you're right. I'm being a dick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it just, so yeah, I have these certain go-to people that I'm like, oh, I'll let her do the talking. I'll just like cut and paste here. Bam. There you go. Cause I just get too mad. I can't.
Yeah.
I'm just like, fuck you.
No, I agree. There are friends that I talk to where I'm just like, I feel this way about this thing that this person said. And I can't articulate how I feel, like, and I'll talk to them about it and they'll just like explain it to me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm so glad I talked to
right?
you about this.
I know. We just get too bound up in it. It's really good to just cut through. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's good to know people like that. That's the good part. Having people out there writing all the time and stuff. People that are good at that.
Mm-hmm.
That helps a lot in my day.
Yeah, for sure. I'm lucky to know brilliant people, you know?
Like, yeah.
I'm so, feel like we're so spoiled out here, you know? Our community, like the poetry community out here is like, it's just crazy. And it's, I don't even know half of it. Like, I just know, like, the pockets that I found, yeah, but there's so many more. Like, I want to go to the slam poetry thing and, like,
yes, yeah, we should go together.
I totally want to go with you. Yeah.
It's Thursday, next Thursday. Let's go.
Yeah. I'm down.
Okay, cool.
Sold.
My new friend who lives around the corner from me that, he came to our reading at Pegasus, mm-hmm, and really liked you a lot. And then we ran into each other on BART or whatever. And then we're chopping it up. And then he was at the motorcycle club reading too.
Oh, cool.
That I was sitting by him, whatever. But he's like my neighbor, turns out.
Oh,
so weird.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So weird. But anyways, yeah, I've been telling him, like, let's start going to some of these things. So we should all go. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, he came to the store the other night, too. You read at the store.
Yeah. I think I know who you're talking about. Like, we're Facebook friends now. Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool. Life is so weird. I was, like, running for BART, and he, like, started coming to ask me something, and I totally did the, like, I don't have any money. Please don't ask me. And he's just like, are you Cassandra? And I was like, oh, my God. He's like, thought I was going to ask you for money. I'm like, I did. I totally did. I felt like such an ass, right? But fuck it. Yes. It's not like every other day somebody right in that same spot didn't ask me for money, so fuck. Honestly.
Yo, I was walking in North Beach, and I had headphones on, and I was walking to do a reading, and I was kind of like in my own world. I was going to get a cup of coffee, and I noticed this guy like waving at me, and I don't want to make eye contact, so I don't really look, and like, he keeps waving at me and like he's talking to me, and I don't make eye contact. I'm just like, please leave me alone. And like, I just walk to the coffee shop and get coffee, and then I go to the reading, and then I check my phone when I get to the reading, and I get this Facebook message, and it's someone who I've talked to before. And it's someone who I've
met. You better get used to having fans, girl. You better get used to it.
I felt shitty, but at the same time, like, you see a girl walking by herself with headphones on, like, and you're waving at her and she doesn't want to talk to you. Like, I don't know. I thought he was just, like, being a creep. Mm-hmm. Like, it made me feel really creeped out. Oh, but I felt bad about it. But at the same time, I don't know.
Oh, well, that's funny. Text me on Facebook like normal people. No. God, we want to talk in person? What's your problem?
I felt like such a bitch.
That's funny. I do. No, it's really fucking confusing because it's not like you can really see the faces of the gazillion people that are on there all the time. It's this tiny little box. And then so you go to all these readings and then people are like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
All the time I feel like that. So I just try not to sound like too much of a dick and just go along and then be like, oh, you're that person. Okay.
Yeah.
But after every reading, how many people friend you? And then only if I have some specific reason to go like look and say, oh, that's who they are. That's what they look like. Otherwise, it's just like, yeah, okay. It's whatever. Yeah. Obviously, they're from the reading. And then you don't ever think about it again. And then they're in your face talking to you. And you're like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
And that's a common part of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So we're like at the 1.5 hour mark. Do you want to make any shout outs?
I don't think so. Just my press and my fucking family
shout
of writers.
Shout out your press.
Yeah, no, Manic Tea Press for sure. I mean, has showed me major love, and I'm really thrilled to be there. And I'm doing a project with a couple ladies, Misty Rainwater Lights. Do you know her?
No.
Poetry?
I don't think so.
Like it.
Yeah.
And Nicole Henares. Well, they started a little press called Dangerous Hair. They both have some big wild hair. Anyhow, I have a little project coming out with them as well. So
awesome.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. And they're trying to do like Punk Hostage does with a nonprofit, and especially for like women prisoners and things like that.
That's great.
So as I said to MK, I think it's pretty cool to have some crazy ass women writing for some crazy ass women.
Yeah. No, seriously.
Because you should definitely check out Misty. She, her stuff is, she's quite a character. Very interesting.
Yeah, I have to. Well,
I'll write it down.
Yeah, make a list or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, that's just another poet I don't really know in person, but I know from Facebook and from being published on a lot of the same sites. When I started out, I did a lot more publishing on the internet than really readings out.
Yeah,
it took me a long time to get that because, you know, I didn't go out that much. But I would meet a lot of people from being on their websites and stuff like that.
Cool. How should we wrap this up? I don't know. This is, like, not a typical interview, really, or podcast show. This is just, I just like having conversations.
Just chopping it up with Cassandra.
Just chopping it up with Cassandra. I had a good time. Learned a lot of things. I feel like we'd be closer or something.
Yeah, definitely. I do, too.
So, it's been a good podcast. You've been listening to That Lit Podcast with Cassandra Dollett, this week's guest, and me as your host, Alexandra Naughton. Thanks for listening. I always appreciate you guys listening. I hope that you're enjoying these shows. Let me know how you feel about them. I guess you can like send me a message on Facebook, or you can tweet me at THETSARITSA. My cat is crazy. That's not part of the Twitter name. Do you want to like tell people out who's listening to this podcast like how to reach you if they want, you know, read your stuff?
Yeah. Just, like, if Google you. Cassandra Dollett, CassandraDollett.com. I have a really lame website because my son won't make me a new one. I need help. I need a web person in my life. I need a real website. But there are links to many published poems, and I try to keep it updated for upcoming readings and stuff as well.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah. What kind of website is it?
It's Yahoo.
It's Yahoo?
You should look. It's really basic.
You just need a Tumblr.
Yeah, maybe I do. Maybe that would be better.
Yeah. Yeah, you should get a Tumblr.
Yeah. I need to.
I'm all about Tumblr.
Tumblr's the one.
It's a really cool poetry scene.
I mean, I've had a lot of poems on other people's Tumblr things, definitely. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know if I know how to set one up.
I'll show you. It's super easy.
Okay.
Anyway, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. There we go.